Welcome to Ellie's Coffee Talks, the podcast featuring creative entrepreneurs in the Basel area over the best cups of coffee in the best cafes. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi.
We're here at Clara in Basel, the amazing food court, and it's also where some stand-up happens, so I thought it would be a cool place to do whatever is going to happen today.
Yeah, it's true. The first time we did an open mic in Basel was actually here at Clara in this particular room. So,
right.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Back at the roots.
So thank you for coming all the way from Zurich and all the way actually from Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us a little bit how you ended up in Switzerland.
Oh, la, la. So I came for... Well, I have a joke about this on stage I can tell you. So I was like, oh, well, what happened is I fell in love with the guy that spoke Swiss German. I'm like, yeah, it's possible. And and then I moved to Switzerland to be with him. Well, before that, we were for a while in long distance. I was in Canada, he was here in Switzerland, and then I moved here, and now we're in a long distance again, because we broke up. A lot of distance in that relationship.
I love how it starts with a joke already.
Yeah. Well, it's a new joke, so I'm still excited about it. It's not like the other one that I'm... Yeah.
So he was from Zurich?
No, from a small village. Small village. Oh, no, it's driving me crazy. Yeah, but still somebody very present in my life, very important. But we're at the state where our relationship had to move on. And we accepted that because we had so much love and respect for each other. And we were able to let it go and accept it for what it was.
That's nice.
Yeah. Still an incredible man, and I'm very grateful to have him and his family in my life. They're still there.
Nice. So you met there, and then you came here, and that's how you ended up here, and you decided to stay?
So, okay, what happened? I tend to be an all-in type of girl. If I'm doing something, like a sentence I say all the time is like, it's happening. If you hear that sentence coming out of my mouth, then you know that no matter what, that shit is happening. So I was doing my bachelor degree and I decided to come to Europe for one semester. It was my first time on the flight, first time in Europe. I left for 7 months and a half. So I was living in Marseille in the south of France, and I visited Italy, Spain a little bit, and Switzerland. I have a friend who is from Switzerland who visited me in Montreal for 2 weeks, and we hosted him. And so I was like, hey, it's my turn to visit you. And he had a girlfriend. And girlfriends don't like me most of the time. So he referred me to one of his colleagues from university. Who had two roommates, and my ex was one of the roommates.
Ah.
And the way we say the story is, I was sleeping on the sofa and then I wasn't. he was my first boyfriend, I was his first girlfriend.
So cute.
Yeah, a great person, very glad that he was part of my life, still is.
Beautiful story. What made you stay here or come back?
So we're living together here. So I was working here, and why I stayed, I don't know. This was actually one of the hardest moments of my life, breaking up with him and then trying to rationalize why I had this desire to stay here. It was in my guts. I couldn't even verbalize it. And it was getting some of my friends frustrated. Like, why are you fighting this so much? It's Switzerland. Just come back to Canada. You have a nice life here.
Yeah.
And I was like, I cannot tell you why, but I have to stay here. My journey is not done. And I felt like I was growing more as a person. I was becoming a better person faster here than I would have been doing it in Canada. I was challenging myself more on every level in terms of doing sports or learning a little bit, trying at least German, making new friends, just being in another country, visiting Europe. Like, it's from so many aspects, yeah. It was so stimulating, and I was not ready to let go. And yeah. I'm not. I have to remind my mom once in a while, like, yeah, mom, you know, it's not part of the plan to come back to Canada.
Oh, wow. Like, ever? Or just now?
Oh, well, to live, I don't know. I don't see myself living there for now. But I'll be back for Christmas. I'll be 1 month there. Mm. And I'm sure I'm going to be sick of my mom after 2 days, but I love her so much. And I'll do stand-up there, so it's going to be fine.
Cool. Is it easier to... let's talk about that later. But how is the stand-up there compared to here?
I don't know.
You don't know? Oh, because you started it here.
Well, I started it here, so I'm very new in the stand-up. I have 1 year and a couple of months, which is like nothing. It's nothing. I did it a little bit last year as I was in Canada for Christmas. I'm a very like family-oriented Christmas type of person. And so I did a couple of open mics in English, but the French scene is the one that is very important in Montreal. Mm-hmm. So the English, I could feel that they were like a little underdog. The open mics that I did, there was one that there was no audience at all. And there was a comedy club that is pretty awesome. It's called the Comedy Nest. And then I did an open mic there, and it was amazing. It was really cool. And I actually did it for the first time in French in Montreal in January this year. And the thing is, I had a comedian friend from here that was doing it in French and in English. Yeah. And he told me, hey, you're going to Montreal. You have to do it in French. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm so used to do it in English. Yeah. And then he referred me to a friend of his who found me a spot because it was during Christmas time, so most of the open mics were not happening. So I did it in French for the first time, and it was actually one of the Christmas gifts to my mom because she doesn't speak English. So I wrote that in her car. I was like, Mom, I know that you're feeling like you're missing out on most of my journey because of the distance. I'm like, comedy is important to me. I knew that already at that time. Yeah. And this is going to be a big step for me to start doing it in French. And I want to do it with you. And this is for you that I'm doing that.
Nice.
So I started it.
She
just laughed. She's adorable. She's just a big ball of love. And... she's cute. I can't wait to see her again. And so I did it in French, but it was a special bilingual night. Mm-hmm. And didn't go so well. Because turns out most of the audience was Anglophone. But I committed to French because it was for my mom. And then I came back here and I was like, okay, I'm not so good in French, so I need to work on that. And I don't know if I can step ahead at all.
Yeah, sure.
So I was like, okay, I need to work on that. So then I started checking what they were doing in the French portion of Switzerland in terms of open mics. And then I realized that most of them were occurring once a month.
Yeah, which is nothing.
It's nothing. And there were so many people that wanted to have some spots. And I was like, this is not acceptable. I cannot deal with this. I'm not going to wait for 1 month to go again on stage. Yeah. This is not how I'm going to get better. So I wrote to my friend and I was like, hey, I'm going to start my own open mic. Do you know a place? And then he recommended me to a bar because actually the bar owner just wrote to him and told him, hey, I would like to do something about comedy in my bar.
Wow.
Do you know someone? Like, it was
so
like
cool.
The perfect timing. So, yeah, I started once a month very fast. I passed twice a month. And now since September, we're there every week. We're the only open mic, French-speaking open mic, that is there every week.
So where?
It's in Lausanne.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it's 2 hours and a half to go, and then I do my open mic, and then I do 2 hours and a half to come back, and I get to Zurich. It's 1 a.m. or 2 a.m., but yeah, it's fine. I'm very good at sleeping in trains now. I'm amazing at it.
So that's how it started, your French comedy thing, which is called Le Plan Comédie.
Oh, no, that's called... not even that. That's called l'Open Mic de Lausanne. And it's the only stage that is actually a real open mic. Because they have others, they're like, oh, it's an open mic. It's like, go in front of 150 people and a stage and the lights and go try your jokes. You're like, yeah, no, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Like this, and especially not if the audience is paying to get in. Like, this is not an open mic. This is a show.
Yeah.
What
yeah,
are you
yeah,
talking
yeah.
about? It's just a show where you're not paying for the comics. So my stage is one of the only where it's really to test material. Even I will try stuff and I'm like, yeah, okay, see you guys, it's not working. It's an open mic, it's chill. Like, and yeah. So that's the open mic of Lausanne. And then Le Plan Comédie, that's something I launched a little bit later after I quit my job. I was trying to do, so I quit my job, last day was in May. And I was thinking, well, I love doing comedy. I'm quite good at project management and marketing. This is what I was doing before. So let's try to do both. And I found some cities that, like in Basel or in Zurich, where there's a demand for French-speaking comedy, but nobody's fulfilling it. Mm. They're all fighting in Geneva or in Lausanne to have attention. Well, nobody is here to deserve this part. So I thought, hey, let's do that. So the first tour was in 5 cities, and then the second tour was in 4 cities. And it's really hard. It's very challenging. I'm actually reassessing right now what I'm going to do. Like, Zurich is working 100%. I have no problem with that. Lausanne will have to work because it's my base, and I have other projects in Lausanne. I can maybe tell you after.
Yeah, sure.
And Basel, I have a big question mark. It's just quite a journey right now. Yeah. Yeah.
But we'll work on it.
We'll work on it. Yeah.
I believe in it.
Okay. Cool. Cool. Yeah.
Because there's France right next around the corner.
I know, but so, I don't know how to reach them. Yeah. And this is what, like, it's so crazy about this thing. I would invest like a certain amount of money. I would invest the same amount of money for every cities, and then have completely different result. Completely different. And then I tried to do more. And I, at one point, I was doing ads on LinkedIn. Like, who does that? Somebody very desperate.
But it worked, right? At the last one in Basel, somebody saw it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I know. And then I'm like, okay, does the flyers and posters, do they work or not? And then you just like trial and error. I had no flyers, no poster in Zurich. It was the best show. So it's just, you have to learn. Like, I've been told after the second show in Fribourg, which didn't work, they were like, oh yeah, you should have passed by the radio. I'm like, thanks for telling me now that I lost a lot of money. This is very nice. And I think they're... Fribourg is a little village. Well, Switzerland is a village.
Yeah.
I'm from Montreal, so I'm like, ha. It's very small here. And so the little village, if they don't know the person, they're not going to go out to see that person.
Yeah.
They need to see it in the newspaper. They need to hear it in their local radio. And I'm like, okay, is it worth it for me to put all that energy into trying to be present in those cities? So right now what I'm doing is I'm reassessing which are the base one, maximum 3, put my energy into developing them, and then once this is going to be more stable, I'll consider other cities. This is actually, the plan right now.
Cool. And I'll help you with Basel.
Oh, thank you.
Because I just want to see you here a lot.
Oh, I'm very glad to be here in Basel and in your company. And she's fantastic, okay? Amazing human being.
So you, those are your projects right now, and you want to talk about the future projects?
When is it going to be online?
That's a good question.
Okay.
2 weeks, maybe I'll try.
2 weeks? Yeah. Okay. So
Before December.
So in January.
Perfect.
That's why I'm saying it. In January, this is a little like scoop for whoever is listening to that podcast, because it hasn't been like announced officially. But the bar where I'm actually doing my open mics every week. They're repurposing one room and turning it into a comedy club.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is super cool.
And it's a comedy club that I'll be managing.
Oh, wow.
And then we can do comedy in French and English there, so it's going to be fantastic.
So
and
cool.
I'm really, really looking forward to it. And it's going to be amazing. It's going to be so cool. So this is like the next project, and that's why I was like, Lausanne has to work.
Because
it's going to be in the comedy club. Like, this is insane.
Yeah.
I started doing comedy. Like, my open mic, my first one was in March. We're in November, and now I'm gonna have like
your own
comedy club. This is insane, insane.
That's why you had to stay in Switzerland, huh?
Yeah, yeah. This is okay. So for whoever is stuck at a shitty job right now and they're not happy, like I swear to God, quit. I in January, for me, it was clear. Like, I had to quit because I'm feeling miserable in this job and I cannot do it anymore. I'm like, I don't know. Because people sometimes are like, oh, I'm going to find another job before because I'm scared. I'm I was just emotionally at the point where I was like, I have to quit because I don't know. I'll do whatever I need. I'll dog sit. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do, but anything but this. Mm. And I want to be like master of my own life. And since then, everything's just unfolding in front of me without me. Like, I'm working and I'm passionate and I'm trying to do everything that I'm doing right and I'm jumping into all the projects, but everything is really unfolding in front of me right now. It's insane. I was not expecting that, mm-hmm. but like, if anybody has a doubt about like quitting their job, do it and do it. Mm-hmm. I would have done it earlier if I knew it was going to be like that.
Yeah, people play it safe, right? But it's exactly, yeah. I talk about this, I think, on the podcast I just released this week about compromising. And it's exactly, you have to, my friend Cyril says, you have to take a leap of faith at some point. Yeah. You know, you have to trust. You have to do it. Because then it's clear. The universe is like, oh, okay. He wants to do that. I'm going to give it to him.
I'm starting to have goosebumps when you're telling me that. It's insane.
It's like that, right?
I was not expecting that. It was crazy. It still is. I quit my job 6 months ago. I still have an apartment. This is fantastic.
This is amazing.
And I'm kind of eating one meal a day, so that's good.
I eat once a month, but I'm good.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect for my line. I had this joke when I was about to quit my job. I was like, yeah, so stay tuned, guys, to see the result of my new diet and voluntary fasting. I'm going to look amazing.
No, but it's. I think this is an important point that it's probably scary as fuck.
Yeah.
But if you don't do it, then that's what's going to give you the drive, right? To make it happen. And then if it doesn't happen, you can still go back and find a job, right?
Yeah. So what people told me, it's like, okay, Vanessa, what's the worst thing that could happen? That I go back to Canada. I mean, it's kind of chill. So there's that I do, and it's stupid, but I have a little box at home where I was able to save some money. So I have enough money to pay like 1 month of rent. In that box, and I don't touch it. It's not my bank account. And I know that if there's anything that goes wrong to this point, I can still have an apartment and I still have 1 month to figure out the rest. And that gives me actually a lot of courage.
That's awesome. And I'll ask you about what do you recommend for people who want to quit their jobs and start or just start their own things. But first, I'd like to ask you, how did you get into stand-up?
So, I'm from Montreal. There's, like, comedians in Quebec, they're like gods. They're everywhere. No, but it's true. They're on the radio, they're on TV. Like, you could stop anybody in the street and be like, name me 20 comedians, and then they would be able to. They're just cool for comedy there. So, it's really, really crazy. I grew up with that. There's this French comic which is called François Pérusse. Do you know him? No. So I had his tape in my Walkman, and I knew it by heart. So it was always kind of there. Also, when I was younger.
So since you're a kid, because tapes are way back.
Yeah. It's tapes.
Wow.
I always love watching comedy, but I was a very, very shy teenager, very, very shy kid. At home I was fine, but as soon as you were taking me out of home, then not so fine. I did dance, I was dancing, and that's the first time I was on stage and living it, and I love that actually. And then
what kind?
I was doing mostly, it was called Funky, it's a mix between jazz and hip-hop.
Okay.
But since then I've reinserted dance in my life, and now I do like hip-hop and ballet, which I think is really cool because there's two different energy. One is more like structure, it takes all your head space, and the other one is more for fun, but it's still part of the movement, still the flow with the music. So I like to play with that. So that's for the stage. And then when I was at university, I did also some academic competition where I was representing my university. And then I had some classes about how to present and how to speak publicly. So all of that. And then at one point, I was working for a startup, which was about to close. And I was like, okay, I'm going to work on skill development. And I knew a comedian. And then I was like, hey, can you teach me some basic structure of jokes? Like, for example, you have the rule of three, so you're going to do an enumeration, and then the third one is going to be surprising, and that's your joke, this is your rhythm.
That's what you're going to teach me next year?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, if you want. Yeah, yeah, I could teach it to you whenever
She's
you want.
She's going to have a workshop in Basel? Yes, I'm putting this out
there. She decided that. But, yeah, so those are the things. So I was writing a blog. I had a blog at that time, and I was trying to write every week.
So a blog about comedy?
It was about whatever. Like, once it was about how my boss told me that I didn't have a job anymore, and how it was a weird situation, and about like breakups and guys, and like
in a funny way. No?
Yeah. So for every article, he would tell me, okay, try to do that type of jokes, and then I would try to incorporate it into the whole thing. And then I wanted to try to do an open mic. I went to one in Zurich, which was really bad. So I was like, okay, maybe not. And then I went to see a show at Comedy House. I went by myself. And then the comics there, they were so good. And the evening was fantastic. And it's Benjamin Delahaye that actually organized it.
In Zurich.
Yeah. And I was in that audience, and I felt something. And I never had that before, but I felt it in my guts. And I was so mad at myself, and like the thought that it was just like so loud in my head was, why aren't you not doing anything to be on that stage right now?
Wow.
And it was so strong, I had to walk back home because I couldn't like handle myself. And yeah,
and it was anger.
I was mad at myself for not doing anything to be on that stage. I'm like, why you're not there? Why you're not going towards that place?
And you never thought of it? Well,
I thought about it, but it was not... Yeah, I was not going on stage. So okay. The next day, I was going to Canada for a week. And then when I came back, I did a little comedy workshop. Because, yeah, the timing was perfect. Ahmed Bilge, who organized a lot of stuff in the English in Zurich, he and it's the only time he had that, a three-day workshop for comedy. So cool. And it was as soon as I came back from Canada. So I did it. And then after that, I started doing all the open mics all the time. And it's
practice.
Been more than a year. Yeah. Like, there were, like, sometimes 2 or 3 weeks I would be on stage every night.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And wow. Sometimes, like, 2 shows a night. Yeah. Yeah. You need, like, stage time. You're on stage all the time.
And what did you feel the very first time you were on stage for stand-up?
I loved it so much. So I don't know if we wrote to each other on WhatsApp. But my profile picture is actually after my first stand-up show. It was at the end of the workshop where we would do like a little 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And all my friends were there. And maybe I can show
so
you. You
cool.
Want to see the
yeah,
picture?
Sure.
It's a very symbolic picture to me.
So that's why you keep it to remember
yeah.
The start of it all?
Yeah. And all my friends were there. They were super supportive. And like, you can see how happy I look. And how gorgeous my friends are looking. they're so pretty and so nice. They're the most.
And so you didn't feel fear?
Oh, yeah. I was so nervous. But there's something about being on stage and making people laugh.
Yeah.
And my first 2 sets, like the first one was about dating. And like I was having a good feedback. The second one was the trashiest set I ever done. But if you talk about something trashy or sex, it's really easy to have laughter.
Yeah.
So I did that one, and then after that, I started bombing. bombing. It's you in silence. Nobody's laughing. It's awkward. And
oh, yeah.
The first time I bombed, we had some comics from LA that were visiting, and it was like a awesome night, but I bombed for the first time, and it was so painful. It was horrible. And I don't know if I can... Yeah, okay. Keep on going.
Sure.
So basically...
Yeah.
This is
interesting for me. So.
this was a very crucial moment of my life. So last year, if you would have met me, like June, July, I was someone who would say like, "Hey, so what were you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, I do stand-up comedy. I work in marketing. I was training for a triathlon. It was my first triathlon ever." And that's what I was doing. And I was associating myself to what I was accomplishing. You are what you do. And therefore, I was doing a lot of things. I did my first triathlon ever, which was awesome. And then it was on the 28th of July. And then on the 1st of August, you see this car here? I broke my hand. I was doing biking. I was in, after like 60K of biking, I had an accident, broke my hand. So for 2 months, I couldn't work. I was bombing at comedy, and I couldn't do sports anymore. All my points of reference were gone.
And you were working?
I couldn't work anymore.
You couldn't work at all?
No, I had nothing.
But you still had the job.
I still had the job, but I was in the insurance aspect because I couldn't type, and after the surgery it was awful. It was the first time I ever broke a bone, so
life was like, you're doing too much.
Exactly. And I had amazing friends. They were so supportive and so fantastic. Came to my place, they cook and clean. I tried to clean something with just one hand.
It's
just like the pan moving around in the sink, or cooking.
You have to eat out every day.
So my friends were coming to my place, cooking, cleaning, leaving, or they were inviting me to their place. I felt supported, and I never felt alone all through this journey. And that's when I got to stop everything. And my friend had this kind of metaphor. It's like you're in a pot of water, and it's moving all the time. And now what that injury is going to make you do is just stop moving and see clearly what's in the bottom. And it took a while. I was fighting it. I was feeling miserable. And it was hard. It was so hard. And I remember at one point I felt like sadness that was coming. And it was out of nowhere because I was reading a book. And I felt sadness. I was like, okay, that emotion's there. Let's live it. So I even took Spotify and find like sad song playlist. I'm like, I'm gonna live this moment. I'm gonna cry. I'm ready. And then I started crying so much, and I couldn't even tell why I was crying, but it was just like really, really deep. You know, like when you cry and it hurts. And then I thought of my friends and how much I love them and how much I'm grateful to have them. And all my friends are special. Like, they all have a little something that other people would consider weird, but it's just them. And I accept them as they are. And I was like, if I can love them without judging them, why can I not do it with myself?
Oh, now we're getting...
and I was like, everything I was identifying myself with, so the marketing, the stand-up, the sports, the triathlon, I was not doing any of this, and my friends were still judging that it was enough to help me and be there for me, even if I was not doing that. So at the core of who I am enough, even if I don't accomplish anything. If I accomplish, it's plus, but their love and friendship doesn't depend on that. And that was the learning that I made out of this. Yeah. So it's a big story.
By yourself? You learned that by yourself?
Yeah, it was after crying, and then I had this...
realization?
Yeah, exactly. That aha moment. And I stopped crying after, and I felt lighter. I was like, okay, this is what I had to understand.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a while.
But for you to be so aware of your emotions and what you feel in your body, what did you do before that? Or do you have that since childhood, or... how do you, because most people would be like, oh, I feel sad, or I feel shitty, let's go drinking, or whatever.
I think, okay, so a lot when I was younger, I express my feeling through dance. Not a great dancer, but I love dancing. Mm-hmm. So if I would have something to live, I would go in my bedroom and then I would dance.
Yeah.
That
That's
was
how
my
you release.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I was in college, I was actually a cheerleader. And yeah. And at one point, we did a pyramid, and the cheerleader fell on my head. And I had a neck injury, which prevented me from dancing.
Oh.
And that's when I started writing.
Oh, see, life is amazing.
Yeah, and so writing is always a way for me to deal with things. Sometimes I'm thinking, oh, I'm not feeling good, I'm not comfortable, and then I'm going to try to write it down. There's that exercise, for example, you can start, like, just open a Word document and write, the truth is... And then let your brain, like, keep on writing everything. And then you just write it. You don't, like, judge it. It's just there. It's out. It's not in you anymore. And that feels good. So I was doing that. What I was doing also is the journey is called The Artist's Way. I don't know if you heard about it. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get back into my morning pages. There was a moment where I was doing it every day. But this is something great. Start your day writing 900 words. And it just empty your mind, and it helps you understand, oh, this is how I feel about this.
Mm-hmm.
And also doing stand-up comedy is a lot about self-reflection and your perception, because you have, like, hack comics that are going to do, like, the normal jokes. Guys are like this, girls are like this, and they don't, like, reveal themselves. But the good comics that you like is the one that talks about themselves and their point of view. And this is a constant quest in stand-up, and this is actually why I love doing stand-up. Because it's you facing yourself. And
it's like a therapy.
Yeah. Well, kind of. Is it a therapy?
Where the people process, pay you.
The process to get there is a therapy. But then after that, it's something that is worked on. And you try to connect to the other by being your honest self. And this is actually very challenging. It won't be just therapy. But you're going to try to work on your pain points.
I love how I don't even have to ask you questions.
I'm talking so much.
You're just going there.
Sorry.
I have two questions. So you can choose what you want to answer first.
Okay.
I would like to know more self-care tools that you have, like writing, dancing, I would like to know what is hard about stand-up, because we're kind of talking about it.
We can talk about self-care. I like that. Well, this is my way of coping. First of all, I started doing therapy.
Perfect.
I'm very open about that. I think something that is great about life is finding the right person to surround yourself with and letting them have an impact on your life. And I have this friend, and I was with him, and he saw that I was not doing well, and it was before the first tour, so a lot of stress was to come. And he told me, Vanessa, you need to start doing therapy. There's some stuff. And I was already talking with a friend of mine who had an insight about something that I had to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, you need to start doing therapy. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And then he like took his phone in front of me and started. He's like, okay, you could call there. I'm like, look, I swear, before the end of the week, I'll find it. I'm like, it's happening. That's my sentence. It's happening. So I did it. And he suggested me to do a CBT approach, cognitive behavior therapy.
Okay.
And the way I could describe it, this is my perception of that. Okay, so my problem is I would have what I call like little like tornadoes of thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay, several of them. And then there would be like some typical word that would just like get me in that tornado, and then it would just like spiral me down.
Yeah.
And then what this therapy is helping me do is, first of all, like realize those are the types of thoughts that brings me in that tornado.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm not able to necessarily prevent me from going into it because I just started doing therapy, but I can control it better. I'm not going so low as I used to. There's some exercise. So, for example, because it's very emotional, like those tornadoes, it's just emotional. It's not rational most of the time. So what I would do is if he told me to do math in my head, if I'm starting to freak out. So what I like is I take the number 63 and then I do minus 3 until I'm done. And then like usually it's calming me down a little bit. So there's that. I'm working a lot right now. I'm very open about this because I think we have to talk about it. I'm working a lot about self-worth. And this is something quite... It's hard for me to do stand-up comedy and have self-worth problem. I think probably most of the comedians, I don't know, I don't want to position myself as like, all the comedians are like, oh, I'm special. But me personally, it's hard for me to tell people, hey, like, come in a room full of people, everybody shut up, listen to me, and give me your money so I talk about myself. Mm-hmm. It's something very weird. So, I'm trying to work on that. So there's that, and then I'm trying to journaling. I'm surrounding myself by the right people. I'm talking about it. Sometimes I tend to isolate myself if I'm not good. It's okay to do it for a certain amount of time, but you need to get out as well.
And talk to people.
Yeah, because otherwise you do that thing that, it's an expression that I invented. I really like it. It's crying in your belly button. It's when you're just like feeling sorry for yourself and you're like, oh, I'm so not good and life is not fair with me. It's crying in your belly button. And like sometimes you think your situation is worse than it actually is. And you have friends that are like, what are you complaining about? So there's that.
And what are good, what did you say? Good people or surrounded by?
Yeah, by the right people.
The right people. What does it mean for you, the right people?
I like to say energy, people that can listen, but also people that can tell you the truth. I don't like people that constantly agree with me. You need to be able to challenge me. I know how I think. I don't need someone to say, oh yeah, you're right, like this is not helping me. So for example, I have this friend Max. He's a life coach, and he's great. And sometimes I'm going to talk about a situation. He's like, okay, so now I know you're expecting me to tell you my point of view. Where I disagree with you, and this is what I think about that. And then I'm able to listen to it and accept it, and sometimes it gives you another perspective. And I think this is very important. What else? I don't drink alcohol if I'm sad. This is my golden rule. Not that I ever had the tendency of being alcoholic or something like that, but I don't even have that pulsion, but it's still a rule. If I'm not happy, I don't drink alcohol. And I will try my best to feed myself properly when I'm not good. So I'm like, even if emotionally I'm not good, at least let's give yourself physically the proper tools to feel better, and maybe you're going to start feeling better from that side. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Oh. And movement. Dance.
Yeah,
I
have to start again. I have to start again.
In your bedroom. No?
I should more. I'm working on this right now. So I was doing a lot of anxiety lately. drinking 2 liters of tea per day. Like, this is how much comfort I needed. Peeing a lot right now. I bought myself a sweater. I have it with me. It's like I was in a store and I started having anxiety and I was like, I need something comforting. And I bought myself a sweater that I considered very comforting.
And I wish we had a camera.
and it's vegan, so that's even better. It's important.
Are you?
I'm not vegan. I'm vegetarian. Almost vegan. But I still have eggs, but I buy eggs from Happy Chicken. Mm-hmm. I'm very careful about that, but otherwise vegetarian. I'm trying also to be responsible in what I buy, like where it's from, how it was, like
what the
ethical, ecological impact of it. I think we need to be aware and conscious and self-aware of what we do. Mm-hmm. And that allows me to buy, well, I don't buy clothes, or not so often. Like, this says like more than a year old, and it's
her pulley, her sweater.
Yeah, my sweater is a year old. There's this store. You just need to know where to buy the stuff. And we don't need clothes.
And do you see yourself dancing on stage and doing comedy at the same time at some point?
I don't think I'm good enough at dancing. I love dancing. I'm not good at it. Same thing for singing. I would never sing on stage because I'm a horrible singer. But
because you often see comedians use whatever they learned before. Like, singing, dancing, beatboxing, whatever they they're used to do.
I don't know. I don't even see yet my first show, because I'm very aware that I have a journey before getting there, and I'm embracing that journey. And like playing in front of three person, I'm like, okay, good, I'll do that. Or like I was in Edinburgh playing in front of a room full of drunk Scottish men, and I'm there talking about makeup. Yeah. Like, yeah, we can relate, right? But it's fine, and I like this. This is the ground right now, and I'm living it.
Yeah. Do you have a spiritual practice?
I do meditation. Does that count?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I try to do meditation. Right now, so I was in a, let's call it a storm. Mm-hmm. It was in a storm where a lot of stuff went by the window. I killed three plants.
I heard I killed. I was like, oh my god, what?
Look, for me it's horrible because I'm a very caring person and I love my plants, but yeah, three of them died. So this is how much I was not like in my environment and aware of what was surrounding me, because I was just on survival mode. And now I'm getting back at getting healthier habits. So that's why I want to start journaling again. I was doing at least 10 minutes of meditation. I have to start it again. It's part of the plan. It really helps.
Do you want to share why you were in the storm?
I can say it. So basically, the Pont Comédie, the tour, was super, super stressful to manage. It's very... stressful and frustrating to not have results. Like, I had one place, people came up in the audience in the end, but I had no tickets sold. So I got there and I lost so much money, and I was very mad at myself for losing so much money when I don't have a job. Like, money's important, because food.
Money is food.
Money is food. But I had to take that journey. I had to do that learning. So it's fine. I checked my bank account. I'm okay. But so this was stressful. And also my ex-job asked me to work full-time for 2 weeks and a half. So where I was working before, my colleague, she went on holiday. And the guy who they hired to replace me rage quit. Yeah, fun time. And so they wrote to me, like, hey, Vanessa, you want to work full-time for us for like 2 weeks? And then I was like, yeah, sure. So that's what I did.
It's perfect.
I did. Yeah, it's perfect. But it's also...
it was stressful to have both then.
Yeah. It was too much. Yeah. It was too much. I had stomach ache. I had headache. My friends were telling me that they were worried about me. And like, even the last day where I was working full-time, like, my vision was not good. Yeah, right. Like, it was affecting my vision. And I'm still trying to get back to the normal me right now. It's been almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's working too much is not good.
I know.
I always say it.
But if I was not doing it, I think that my ex-work colleague, who's still like a very dear friend of mine, wouldn't have been able to go on holiday. And she deserved it.
Yeah.
And for her, it was fine.
Because
I wanted her to go on holiday.
Nice. So Vanessa is a good friend too.
I try, but they're amazing friends too. Like, it's a two-way thing.
Yeah. So would you have any, now that you've lived that, the struggle of starting a new business, do you want to share about any kind of advice you would have for people starting their own business, their own journey?
What I've learned is you need to prioritize things. I really learned that quite fast. Because at first I was caring about everything, all the small details, and this, like, is not perfect, and trying to make everything perfect. And then at one point, you know what, you just have to have something that kind of works, and then keep on going, and then you'll learn and do a lot of learning. Don't be too mad at yourself if what you're trying to do not working, but you need to be aware and be ready to learn as fast as possible and adapt. This is what I've learned. Trust the right person, expect some backlash, I was not expecting that. That's what was hurting me. People. Yeah, mm-hmm. People not being so supportive or so nice.
Like your friends and family?
No, my family has been amazing. People that I consider that were friends or not such close person, but yeah. There were some moments that I was very surprised.
So choose your people.
Yeah. But be grateful of those that you meet mm-hmm. through this and mm-hmm. that are there to support you, mm-hmm. Which is amazing. Don't make it just about yourself either. Try to still like keep perspective and realize that other people also have a life and try to care and about it.
Sometimes I noticed also working like on my own projects with friends, and maybe as friends they're quite okay and then quite cool, and then working together might not work. I've also experienced that, because you have very different perspectives.
And I have a very clear idea of what I want, and I think I'm a very demanding person. Like, I think just right now, like the way I'm talking and my rhythm, the way I'm talking, like I'm talking about business now. It's completely different. It's not like, oh yeah, I did meditation. I'm like, no, it's business. It's serious. Don't mess with me. You're gonna regret it. I'm very direct when
I'm
it comes.
I'm demanding.
I think I am very demanding. I think there's some stuff that I understood how it works, mm-hmm. and I'm like, it's happening this way.
This
is how you're doing mm-hmm. it. And then I'm not negotiable. Like, no,
yeah,
I'm not scared.
But that's great. Boundaries.
Yeah. I'm learning about this. Yeah.
Anything else? But that those were already super cool.
Yeah. I'm working on this, but be nice to yourself.
Yeah.
Take time to slow down.
Yeah.
And it's okay to slow down, and you might actually be more productive by slowing down.
Totally.
So this is something I'm still learning.
Do you have a regular kind of day?
I'm trying to find it again. Because right now I do... I have a lot of stage time at night, so I would mm-hmm. try to wake up. Lately, I've been waking up and then I drink like 1 liter of tea and then working a little bit. And then after that, I would eat
So
lunch.
What is working? Is it sending emails or writing? Do you have a specific writing time and a specific
Oh, yeah. If I say working, it's not writing. Writing is something that I would do later on during the day. But I'm still trying to figure out what's the best time for me mm-hmm. to write. Mm-hmm. What I did, though, that I did a little bit of behaviors. I'll explain. So I have this playlist on Spotify that I play whenever I want to write. Mm. So I train my brain that whenever it hears that music, it's because I'm gonna write. So I don't know if it helps or not. In my head, I think it helps.
So what kind of music is it?
A lot of piano. I like a lot Ludovico Einaudi. I don't know if you know him. It's a pianist.
I'm not sure. It's something without lyrics.
Without lyrics, mm-hmm. and it's piano and it's classical mm-hmm. music.
And when I listen to classical music and I write, and it's like almost playing the piano.
Oh,
on the computer,
yeah,
you know?
maybe. But I was writing my master's degree thesis with that music, and I just kept it. It was another insane part of my life, writing my master's degree thesis while working full time. Yeah.
It's just like challenging.
I don't know, but at one point I said this is happening, and then I had to make it happen. I was waking up at 5 in the morning. At 7 I was at the office, 7 to 9 working my thesis, 9 to 6 working full time job, 6 to 9 thesis again, going home, sleep, repeat. I did that for months.
And then you were fine, or
I was not good. I remember one night, because at work my work colleague that is my friend Shirley, she was not working at that point. I was alone in the office, and then the client just gave us the first campaign that we needed to manage. Yeah. And then he was very demanding, and I was also looking for an apartment. All three at the same time. And it's kind of crazy looking for an apartment in Switzerland, because like you go there and there's like 25 people and they're like most of them applying right on spot and you're like, wow, I don't have any chance. So I was visiting one and I had an anxiety attack and then I was on the bench of a park and I just started crying. And I called my friend and I told her all about this. I was like, it's okay. I have to think that it's too much right now. Like, I'm allowed to feel like this. And I'm like, in 10 minutes, I'm going to stand up because I need to go buy food. But, like, right now, this is too much.
Yeah, yeah.
And 1 week later, I was at the TEDx conference in Zurich. And then I met Max, who's one of my best friends that I mentioned, the life coach. I handed my master's degree thesis that morning, and in the afternoon I got a call that I got the apartment I wanted.
Wow.
So this is actually one thought that I hang on to, is when you're having your breakdown, it's because you're very close to your breakthrough.
Oh, another nice sentence.
But this is how I lived it. Yeah. I couldn't do it anymore, but I was so close of having everything that I wanted to have.
Yeah. You had. Oh, you mean when you had the breakdown?
Yeah. I was so close. I was 1 week away.
Yeah.
1 week away. This is crazy.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
So that's my journey.
It's beautiful. Maybe one last question.
Yes.
Or let's see. What do you think about Swiss humor compared to Canadian humor or any other kind of humor you know?
Because the thing is, I'm doing it a lot in English and I'm doing it in French. So in French it would be a lot of Swiss people or French people, but they're very, very generous, incredibly generous, but their comedy is very different. And then in English, it's not so much Swiss people, there's a lot of expat being there, and then it's English comedy, which is different. So let's say we have a spectrum. So like, everybody think about a line in your head, and then like on the left side you would have like improv, and then on the right side you would have like theater, and then stand-up comedy would be in the middle. While in English it would be closer to improv, when in French it would be more theater. So the way they do jokes, the way they deliver the jokes is completely different in French. Not a huge fan of it, but they say I have a very Anglo-Saxon style.
Because
they would go, ooh, I was walking, and then they would do like all the gesture of them walking, because we don't know what walking is. When in English it would be more people that are static and they're like, okay, so I was doing that the other day and then this happened.
Yeah.
So it's more simple, but it seems to me, my own perception, and I'm not objective, more honest. And this is why I really like the English stand-up. And yeah, so that's my style.
It would be like telling a story to your friends, you think, or
Is it like telling a story? It's super effective, actually, because the thing is that with the theater part, the sketch, they use a lot of words before getting to the punch. As I'm telling you a story, when in English it would be like set up punch, set up punch, set up punch, so you get a rhythm very fast. Like, you want me to tell a joke to tell
Please.
You the difference? Okay.
Please.
So one joke that I really like is the one about push-up bras. Where I say, oh, I used to wear push-up bras because I thought, hey, why only lie about my personality? And then when it was time for the big reveal, I was getting super nervous. I was looking at the guy. I was like, hey, do you like magic tricks? Because I'm about to make a lot of things disappear right now.
Yeah.
Like my boobs, my self-confidence, your erection. That joke has 5 hits.
Yeah.
Within a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Hit. In French, the way they would say it, they would be more like, so I started seeing this guy and it's going quite well. And then the other day he was at my place laying in bed and we were about to do it for the first time. And that's when I thought, oh my God, I'm wearing a push-up bra. What am I going to tell him? You know, like, because I already lied about my personality, so maybe he's not going to be so deceived about this part. See how different it is? It takes way more words, less effective. But also the language makes it a little bit more complicated.
French is more words,
It is more words, because right now I'm trying to translate some of my jokes, and I'm like, oh my God, French, why are you so complicated? But I'll adapt them.
I still write in English, actually, since forever. Not comedy, but, well, now I started just so you know.
Yeah. So an open mic is soon, and I hope you're going to come.
I'm waiting for your teachings.
Oh, God.
Year.
Oh, God.
I've already told all my friends I was going to do stand-up, and now they think it's normal. Now they're like, oh, you go to an open mic, you're going on stage, like, so random, you know. I'm like, no, not yet.
Well, you should definitely. You can send me your text and then we can talk about it. And if you have any question, and I have so many books about stand-up, like, because I'm a very academic person, so if I'm like, I love knowledge, and I'm like, ooh, I don't know that, let's read everything that that there is about that to know it.
That's cool. I don't read.
But there's some techniques that are very efficient I could teach you if you want.
I'm so excited. This podcast was amazing.
Was it?
I hope for you too.
This is just me talking, like, oh yeah, broke my hand, and then like as a cheerleader.
I hope it was also fun for those listening and it was not too noisy. Maybe a couple more questions.
Yeah,
we have a few more. Maybe your phone is ringing right now because we are actually going
Wait, they should listen to my mic. Yeah, but I stopped it. It's the Batman theme song.
You can play it.
No, but it stopped. But great way to start the day feeling like a superhero. That's just what I'm saying.
It's your favorite super. You can say that.
Yeah, Batman. Yeah. Batman is my superhero. Yeah. Because first of all, he became what he fears, which are bat. And also, like, he's doing a lot of things even though he's considered as the villain. And he's doing it not to have, like, recognition from people, but just because it's the right thing to do. And I think that's cool.
What I'm going to take that from one of the podcasts I listened to. What is it? Impact Theory? No, or Women of Impact. It's an American podcast with Lisa Bilyeu. Yeah. She asks, she's into superheroes, and she asks, what's your superpower?
What's my superpower?
Since you're talking about Batman.
Yeah.
Well, I would say make people laugh, but...
I'm learning. It's not every day. Maybe tonight I'm not going to be funny. I want to talk about microwaves. Let's see how not funny that is. That and ugly babies. It's going to be a fun time. But I'm not putting the ugly babies in the microwave, if you're wondering. I'm not going there. What's my superpower?
Not funny at all.
I know what's my superpower. I have grit. I don't quit. Like, I was even talking about about it with my therapist. Like, yeah, but you know, sometimes, like, you quit a project. I'm like, no, it's not an option, ever. If I say it's happening, like, I remember...
It's happening.
It's happening. Mm-hmm. Once I had a half marathon I wanted to do, and I wanted to die after 2 kilometers. And it didn't stop. It was like, it's happening. It's happening. That's it. There's no other option. And this is something I can do. I can have a focus. Like, this is happening. And then there's nothing you can do that is going to move me away from that. You can cut my leg. I'm still going to keep on going.
<It's> awesome. So
this is
French comedy in Basel is happening.
We're going to... With you, I will consider it. Because I was not sure, but for you, it would be different.
Thank you. So thanks for doing this, and let's go to the open mic now.
Yes, perfect.
And thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you.